Okay, hey everybody, my name is Mike Boatwright. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Okay, now at this point I could pull out something from the big book about outright mental defectives, or we think not, or any of those kind of things, but nah, none of them apply. I remember when I was about 6 months sober and I was at I was sitting on the front porch of the Triangle Club, and a person came up and said something to me that really sent me off the deep end. And I went down and I talked to Dow. Some of y'all remember Dow. And he said, you know, this outfit doesn't attract the healthiest of people. Now, I'm not talking about you, Mick. I'm talking about the fact that I think I must be nuts because I usually understand what you're saying. So, Mick's a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's been sober since dirt, and looking forward to hearing his story and then the rebuttal from his wife later on, maybe, if we need it. Okay. Mick, it's all yours.
Take it easy. Good evening. My name's Mick. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, okay.
But I'm thinking of changing it to collard greens. Why not? But thanks very much for asking me, Tim. Where is he? He's gone somewhere. There he is, over the back. It's a pleasure and an honour. And I'm very grateful to be able to say that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I put my feet under the table of AA in 1979, February the 5th, 1979, in the blackout. But I'm going to go back to a bit before that. I was born in North Wales, and that's a part of Great Britain. A lot of people don't know that. It's actually joined to the mainland. But they have their own language. And I was born in the same house as Lawrence of Arabia. And that's what I forgot. That was probably the start of it. Mixing me up. But it's a fact. I was born in the same house as Lawrence of Arabia in North Wales. I was taken to a chapel at three doors away. And there's only four houses, but one of them is a chapel. So my start with religion or whatever wasn't very good because I didn't speak Welsh, and it was all in Welsh. The only other time that I was involved in religion as such was when I was about, I don't know, must have been about 11 or 12. On a Sunday, I joined the St. George's Church choir because they said you get 5 shillings a month. That's handy. That was quite a few bob then, money, you know. But on the way home, and it was a load of crap anyway, on the way home I noticed that there was newspapers out there, society's newsagents. And over in Europe, especially in Great Britain, they have letter boxes where you put letters in. But they weren't open that day, that newsagent. It didn't open on a Sunday. So I noticed people were putting money in the letter box. And I was clever even at that age. I didn't take it all because I could get my little hand in there. I only took some each week, so they didn't stop it. And that's really my full extent of religion. Although I must say that when I got sober, I did go to monasteries, or a monastery, 3 times, because I kept an open mind. But I've never been able to, I've never been given the, I don't know if it's a gift or whatever it is, but I go along with anyone that's been given the gift of religion or of God. I've never had that experience yet. But I've had experience with you people. You're my higher power. AA is my higher power. I lost my father when I was 10. I didn't lose him, he got killed. And my mother had a nervous breakdown at that point and became a vegetable. Drinking and the drugs of the day, you know, through the medical, I don't mean street drugs. And I watched her die from a distance in a nut house later on. I had to come to terms with a lot of these things when I got sober. I was the youngest of four. The other three had left the house, virtually. Now, my sister was still there, but she had a lot of problems as well. I had another sister who was older, 12 years older than me. She died in the same nut house as my mother, with a wet brain at 42. My brother's 10 years older than me, and he's as fit as a fiddle, and he don't drink, and he just laughs all the time. Isn't that true? I do have my wife with me this evening, especially the hecklers. She's got 39 years black belt in the other room, so you won't see her foot move. I can tell you that now. But it's just trying to remember back, you know, what it was like. I can simply put the whole of my childhood before I took a drink, and I believe and firmly that my character was formed before I took a drink. As our son, who's now got 10 years sobriety, one of them, I've got three and a daughter, we thought he was alcoholic by the time he was four, and we were right. Nothing you can do about it until they hit the rock bottom, and he hit the rock bottom, he's 10 years sober. He's down in Brunswick tonight. He's a lorry driver, a truck driver. I'm reverting to my old British, you know. But otherwise he'd be. I do have my wife here, she's backing me up, and if I tell any lies she'll be shouting, "You're a fucking liar." I've had a ball, I really have, in sobriety. And I hope my wife has, and we look back, we've had hard times, like anybody else, hard times. But it doesn't seem that hard to me. The hard times are before. You know, I was in love with a young lady by the age of 15, and we stayed together, and we had two children. And I was travelling around the country, around the different places around the world, and you know, I just really treated her very bad. And it culminated in 1972. I deserted her. Well, and I met Sandy, my wife, today. We've been together 46 years. And I was at a meeting the other night, and someone said, you can't have a relationship if you don't believe in God. All I say is, speak for yourself. It's simple. Now, there is many ways I've found that there's use for everyone, and I've got a use. How many people call me that they've got an atheist on their hands? Well, call me, I'll give you my number after. You use sponsorship a lot. I don't like the word. I call it friendship. And that's what it was. I'm here because of a sponsor. Because what do you give to me? You're a devout Catholic. But anyway, I'm jumping him out. I'll go back. Now, at the age of 11, 12, if it didn't move, it belonged to me. And if it did move, it belonged to me as well. And I went with the theory, you know, do unto others before they do unto you, then fuck off before the cops arrive. And I wasn't on my own, because the area I lived in, I was dragged out of the mountains in North Wales down to east of London, 70 miles east of London on the coast, Dover, Canterbury area, country. And you know, so that was all different, but I can't see that really made any difference in my character, because as I say, it was already formed by then. And a Welsh mining community, my mother's side, she had nine brothers and five aunties. Three of them come over here in the 30s, and they were all Welsh miners, and they come down for better money from Wales down to east coast of England, south east coast of England. So I was born up in a Welsh mining community in England. And the drinking was just, you know, it's a totally different culture. There's probably people here that have spent some time over there. But you see, at 15, you're in the pub. You know, still today, it's, especially in the country, in small towns. Because what else are you going to do? You know, there was no television. I'm 74 years old. I was here before cell phones and televisions. Especially in our house, we didn't have a television. But I just resented so many people. When the scout guy, the scoutmaster, wouldn't let me and my mate Bob in there, because we didn't have clothes. You've got to buy a jacket.
Goodwill, $6, all right? $300 shoes, $6 Goodwill. I'm still the same. Tire.
But they wouldn't let us in because we never had money. You come from a family of eight. Mine, his old dad had that black lung thing. So we just went down there and dragged all the tarts out and burnt the place down, you know, like you should. Same thing happened with a barn in particular, because the farmer threw us out of the barn. So we burned it down. Not proud of it, but you know, if I had got caught, I was very lucky I didn't get caught in a lot of things, not just that. But arson was and still is a very big thing. And I'd never got into the juvenile court system. If I had done, I wouldn't have been out at all, I know that. So, you know, I got away with an awful lot. And my father getting killed, I used that. I used that with all my old aunties and the uncles. They felt sorry for me. If they didn't, I made sure they did. And I can remember sitting on this railings around the pub, big sign, the windmill. My wife knows this, she's been there. The windmill, big sign flapping about. At 11 o'clock on a Friday night, Saturday night, they threw them, he got thrown out of the pub. Well, there was a male voice choir, I don't really know, you know about the Welsh, but they're known for singing. That comes after, by the way. But they'd get out there singing. Of course, they're down the mine all day, echoed, and they've got the echo chamber. And so they all had their bits. And you'd think people were leaning out the windows, because the houses were only 100, 200 feet away. Why don't you piss off, home? No, they're shouting out requests. You know, that's how I was brought up in the pub, laughing and joking, pianos banging away, and I'd play the spoons myself. But, you know, and it was all good fun. But, you know, by the time I was 15, I'd had my first drunk. Blackout drunk. I've done a lot of damage to myself. Still got the scars to prove it. I'm young. Smashing windows and all that shit. And, but I'd done exactly the same thing again within, I guess, weeks. It might have been less than that, but more similar. And I just went through life like that. I had to drink. I called myself an alcoholic 10 years before I got it. I had a lot of money. Traveled. I was a steel director. Rigger. At an early age, I got a full ticket. By the time I was 21, I was on power stations when I was 15. You know, so what I'm saying is the culture is completely different. There's none of this schooling. I didn't go to school the last 4 years. I went to the iron workshop because they wouldn't. I'd just go to school, clock in, or say that I was here, then walk a mile up to this metal workshop. So I became very good, and I was very good at it. And the old RAF blacksmith, he was, took me under his wing. And I ended up showing the kids how to do this shit. I was the big shot, wasn't I? And I always had to be the big shot. I had to be the one up front doing this and doing that. But anyway, all this time, I got married. I had to get married. That was an old saying, wasn't it? I had to get married. She was pregnant, so we got married. I don't remember the wedding at all. Sadly, in a registry office, you know, cheap as you can get. I vaguely recollect borrowing some money off of her stepfather, Johnny Dunn, this Glasgow boy. And this is how my life always was. Landed up in Victoria, in a room, one room, she was pregnant. I had to step over to put the light out. And that was Saturday and Sunday night. Monday, I picked up a dodgy check from some Jewish solicitors because I'd been on a job and I smashed my nose. But of course, it was a bent claim. I said I'd done it on the steelwork. I hadn't done it on the steelwork. A guy hit me with a lump of wood, not intentionally. But then I was in the 5-star hotel. Well, we were. The Strand Palace in the Strand. And then I went off to, we went off, I went into Dull & Co, a big clothing company, bought a big coat, big hat, got on a train and went down to North Wales and fished that money up in no time at all. It was a few grand, and I'm going back a lot of years. I was probably 21. No, 20. Anyway, no time at all, I found myself. And that's an expression I identify with in AA. I found myself. Because I found myself in some very unusual places with very unusual people at times. And I found myself. I forget where I found myself. Where did I find myself? I want to get a drink. My mouth stuck together. Oh, gin. Nah. Anyway, I forgot where I found myself, so that don't really matter, does it? Well, I know I'm here. And I found myself on a ship. I decided I wanted to be able to tell the stories that all these other boys told. Because where I grew up, it was very, the unemployment rate was very high. It was the same as Belfast, and that was very bad, and the North East Coast. So you know, they either went down the coal mines, or they went to sea. I went away and travelled all over the place for work. But I thought, I want to go to sea. So I got a seaman's ticket, and off I went. But before that ship sailed, I broke into a lifeboat, which is a civil offence, minimum of 10 years. You're talking about a lifeboat that takes 200 people. Can you imagine what the first aid box was like? Up as down as in as out as, and I never told anyone about that. And I went halfway around the world before I eventually missed the ship. I mean, it was only 84,000 tons, but I missed it. And so did someone else who missed it, Christmas Eve in Acapulco. But I got logged, which means you're up before the captain in every port. I don't know how I survived, I don't know how. They took every penny that I had. The only time my first wife got any money, really, regular money, was when the company sent her money direct from London. Every week she got a cheque. Man, that was the only time. Well, there was another time, a year later or so. But all great stories. Oh, man. Coming to in a sidewalk in Acapulco, 7 o'clock in the morning, freezing your nuts off. I mean, it's bloody 90 during the day, but it's like it's not so hot during the night. And I woke up, I heard this and I said, "Hey, Bobby," this kid sitting laying next to me. I said, "Do you know what that was?" He said, "What was it?" I said, "That's the boat leaving." "Good." I said, "Yeah." But it's something like 5 days later, it might have been six, I don't know, I really don't. They put us on the equivalent of a Greyhound bus and sent us to Mexico City. Now I told you I'm from a little village with a castle up on the hill. And next minute, I'm in the British consulate and the consulate come out speaking to me in Welsh. I said, "I don't speak Welsh." He said, my last name, it's R on there, but it's my last name is two words. It's Pugh-Roberts, a real Welshman. And he said, "Well, you've got a Welsh name." He was from the same frigging town as me. He knew my family, he looked after us. And that's just me again. I just fell in there. We got flown home. I landed up in back in East Kent, didn't have a penny, had a toothbrush in my back pocket, remember that. And I got on a train. Well, I knew all the guys on the train because I lived at the end of the line on the southern region. Knew them all the barman and all the rest of it. So I was drunk before I got. I was drunk coming off the plane anyway. But anyway, that's another story. Then a year later, I was back in the old game, still directing, and I went out to Sierra Leone, West Africa, and the life expectancy was 33. That was in 1965. Yeah. And I subbed up something like £80 on the plane. I don't remember it. How did you spend that much? That's like spending like $400 now. Oh, more than that, probably. Shit. But I subbed up, the engineer kept paying the bills. And I was out there. I don't know that it's that long I was out there. The monsoons come, washed this stuff, the stuff we'd put up, conveyors for iron ore. It was an iron ore mine. And we had a canteen there that was full of booze and it was all free. And you can't work. What do you do? Well, I landed up. They run out of booze. And I'd been out to this little cabin there, or hut, in the bush, and I bribed the houseboy, one of the houseboys, to wade through the swamps with me. And you know, they were more scared of the snakes and all the rest of it than I was. I needed a drink. I needed a drink bad. And I stayed there for two or three days. I heard music in the background. Music and drink means party, drum beat. I ended off with a noise. Next minute I was legging it. I'd walked into a, unbeknown to me, I think it's Timonies, it's a Muslim type religion, and it's where they cut the giggly, no, I shouldn't say that. The female genitalia gets taken away. And I walked in on it, and it's all women. Now, I've never been able to run until then. And I managed to hide in the bush until it went quiet and it was dark. And I somehow got back to that hut, and they got me back to the billet. But that was my life. I was, I was here, there, and everywhere. I'll tell you a 100 stories. But I landed up. I always believed there was a better life. There was another way, but I couldn't, for my life, see how that would happen. But I found out how to do it. Drink as much as you can. Do anything you want to get out of your head. Come to AA drunk. Come for quite a while drunk. Get taken into another room so you don't disturb the meeting. And then go out and do exactly what it says in the big book. Go out and try some more patrol drinking. It's worth a good case of the jitters. You might not make it. I made it. First thing I've done in AA is a soldier do. And I come back on a Tuesday night and I try to get in the nut house that I'd been in. I was barred out of, actually. I'd been barred there visiting my mother. Same people don't get barred out of nut houses. But, sorry, I told you I'm not saying. And Cornbread pointed that out. Thank you. I had what I termed a blinding flash of the obvious. I was given the insight into what the problem was. And it was me. And I was 6 weeks sober. Sandy, my wife, had gone off to work. We'd been living for 5 years on a 30 or 28 foot boat. Was the cheapest form of living, and so you could save. Where was the money? You didn't save anything. So you had to work because I had to spend our money as well. There was no savings, and I think I owed £400 rent, and it was £1 a week mortgage fee. So this goes to tell you. And when I went to pay that lady and make amends, she burst into tears. She said, "Mick, keep it." I didn't know that her husband had died of alcoholism some months before. And he was one behind curtains, no one ever knew. Except her. And she'd buy all the drinking for her. That little village we lived in, medieval village in Kent, Sandwich, the other Sandwich, invented the sandwich. We met him. Not him, the original one. And it seemed very romantic on a boat. But don't forget, you've got no water, you've got no electricity. When you come home from work, I'm talking about a wife now, and your home's not there. Can you imagine that? I can't. Never happened to me. Happened to her though. And people see me going down the river past the company she was working at, saying, "Oh, Mick's going fishing again, is he?" No, he won't. He was going across the bay to Ramsgate, where I'd grown up, where I could drink 24/7. And then she'd have to find the boat in a huge harbour. Those sort of things happened all the time. Same with my first wife. I'd go out. I remember going on a Thursday night, coming in on Monday, and she said, "Where you been?" I said, "Well, I went out to get cigarettes." Yeah. Did you mind you tell me I had something in my bag? You know, but I know I'm speaking with Sandy there, but I know for a fact she wished me dead when I was drinking for my own sake. And I've wished a few people dead in the same circumstances. Get them out of the misery. I fell in the water in a fast flowing river. I don't know how many times. But it doesn't matter. Fully clothed in the middle of winter. And got out. And you know, that was the people I run with. They were all saying, people living on boats, all sounds around it. Most of them are pissheads and they just don't give them toss about anything. They're there for the cheapest form of living, like I was. And I wouldn't want that back. But I bounced into AA, and I'm jumping about, but that's the way I am. I bounced into AA. I went back to this nut house. See, I've been to this nut house. I can't remember if it was 6 months before or a year before. And they kept me waiting for about 2 hours. Oh, man. You can't keep me waiting for 2 hours. I'd go to the pub and wait. But I did hear my niece was with this guy who got cured at this alcohol. It wasn't a treatment centre. It was run by the government. National Health. It was an alcoholic unit. they weren't counsellors. They were psychiatric nurses and psychologists and things like that. So, but I went back there. And I went back voluntary, February, freezing. I had no vehicle. I don't know if it was about 16 miles in the ice and snow, but I hitchhiked up there every day. I didn't have to. And I went there for, I can't remember. But I know I was there for more than 6 weeks, because I remember it was 6 weeks. I was getting to AA. It wasn't AA like it is now. In as much as, you know, no one ever mentioned 90 meetings in 90 days. Where the hell did that come from? You've got to remember where you are when you say those things. You know, it's all right in a city, but don't give that impression to people who live down the country. It might be going back there. They ain't going to do it. No, I couldn't do it. But we all started meetings because we had to. I watched AA come up. We were down south for 8 years. Within 6 months of coming off that boat, we'd moved into a warehouse. The guy that I'd been working for, an antique dealer, who I eventually come over to work for 17 years ago here. And when you've been on the boat for all those years, and one thing or another, and it was full up most of the time with people, and it wasn't just drink, there was quite a lot of smoke in the atmosphere, and other things. But you know, when you can go up and turn a tap on, it comes as a bit of a nice surprise. So she got very, very happy with that, the fact that we had running water. It wasn't our place, and we shared it. It was a kitchen, really, in the warehouse during the day. Sandy went off to work, and I was going to go up the unit, and it was concertina doors, like that. I was scared. They were higher than that, and 20 foot wide, with a little hole, you know, with a reinforced glass window. So I tried opening that door and it wouldn't open. I looked out there, shit. There was a pile of snow had blown up against it. Now, it'd been snowing, but it just happened to jam that door up. Here I was, 6 weeks sober, getting to as many meetings as I could, using the phone, didn't have phones. So what we did have was this. Four cell phones, that's what we used. And there's two more of them, I can't find them, she hid them. I had numbers. Didn't have a phone. Used phones. Dropped down the village. That's another story. I'm jumping about, I'm losing the track, but it doesn't matter. We live 400 yards up a track. And I went, after 6 months, we'd found the boat got sold. And asked me I've been out of sea in that boat, raging mad because she wanted to come out of the club at 3 o'clock in the morning in Ramsgate Harbour. having to clamber over frigging fishing boats, and French fishing boats used to come into port. Oh. Anyway, yeah. I left that harbour one night with no navigation lights. Foggy, fog. And all I can remember is, and my eyes closed, keeping the sound of the shore on my right ear. And I know that I went round in circles a couple of times. But somehow I got back in that frigging harbour. She went to sleep, she thought she was going to die. Is that true? And that's just one of many, but I woke up, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, and I heard this voice saying, "All this bloody room, and he has to park that stupid boat here." The fishermen, the commercial fishermen, taking the guys out, trying to get the fuel in their tanks to go out. I said, "Oh, sorry, mate, yeah, I was coming in the fog, didn't I?" And pulled out. You know, that was my life. We went up the river, 3 miles. En route, there was 2 pubs. We didn't stop anywhere else. The one in particular, their landlord was alcoholic, suited me down to the ground. And, you know, what a life. What a waste of life. Man, I didn't do anything. But, you know, so sad when I think of it. But I did have 2 children from the first marriage. Boy and a girl. My son's 52 and my daughter's 48. And my first wife understood. She knew about alcoholism when I didn't. So we've had a very good relationship with my ex-wife and the kids. We're a bit distant at the moment because we've been over here 17 years and they've had kids. We've now got 10 grandchildren. And we've got 2 sons we brought over here 17 years ago. So they've got one each as well. But, you know, by making amends, it's amazing what can happen. Sandy had to pay the maintenance, or what do you call it, alimony. I can't remember paying it. She paid it. And when I got sober, I carried on paying it. And I carried on paying long after the time was up. And she married a guy with plenty of money, big swimming pool and all the rest of it. Lovely guy, Bob. I've done it for me or us. And if you can imagine pulling a young girl, she was 19 when I met her, out of a city up in north of England. I'd been working up there and I met her in a bar. And why her parents let her come away with me, I've no idea. Well, her first experience of south of England was going into a pub, because I've been on this job for about 2 weeks. And I flew up there and got her and brought her down to Greenwich, of all places. The Star and Garter. I've done moonlight flits at our pubs and digs. But we had to lower the cases out of the window of this place. Not because we haven't paid the rent, because the pub was closed, but it's so full you couldn't get the cases down the stairs. That's the sort of place that I used to stay in. Beautiful. Where the landlord lays on the floor, underneath the optics, which is dripping. You know what I mean? I set fire to the friggin' room in there before Sandy jumped down. I don't know how we lived. The landlady was going to bed and she's seen some flickering under the door, what it was, flames. I kicked the heater over on the carpet. Anyway, I could tell you a lot of stories, but I landed up meeting a guy called, in AA, I call it, in AA obviously, Tony, a big fat Irishman. And I stayed with that guy, he was my sponsor. And that's why I don't like the word sponsorship, because Tony wasn't a sponsor. He was a father figure, he was a friend. He told me the truth. Didn't mess about, and he swore like a trooper. I'm really struggling not to swear, I don't know if you realise that. I'll have a slip when I get out. and I actually have got his photo with me. Of
whatever. Somewhere here. I've got Tony Millard. Did I bring it? Did I not? You know what? I didn't. Yeah. Well, do you know what? I haven't got it. Oh, yes, I have. It's in here. There he is. Tony Millard. He died in Ireland, and I went to his funeral. And his wife called after it. She sent this to us. She said, and she was German-Irish, my wife's sponsor. She said, he's made it at last, with a German-Irish accent. But it said at the top, my Lord and my God. And then his face. He died April Fool's Day. He had to, because it was such a giggle. If it hadn't been for laughter, I wouldn't be here. I tell you that now. And I wouldn't stay. Because I thrive on it. This isn't doom and gloom for me. Far from it. I landed up so lucky. I've got a woman there that's right behind me. I've got no money to lose. I've got no possessions to lose. The kids were taken care of by another man, literally. So I had to do very little in that respect. So I could put all my effort into sobriety. And I did. I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was months sober when I started a meeting in what you call them over here, halfway house, probably. And a couple of the old boys said, you can't call it AA meeting. You start again. I didn't know nothing about the traditions. But I soon found out. Of course they were right. I went through that stage, you know, I'm going to save the world. I'm going to open a treatment centre and all this shit. Did you have it? Well, not really, some people have done it. But I haven't. I was eyeball. 112 step calls coming in. And I mean it, literally. And I'd go back to walk 400 yards down to the phone box to call Tony or one of the people in these books. And I'd already asked to get the phone for him. We'd found this bit of land. Got it for nothing, really. Eventually built a house on it. Lost it as well in sobriety. Beautiful house. But I'd already asked to get the phone for him. They gave me 6 months waiting this. Tony, my sponsor, said, call the manager and tell him that you're a member of AA. Just be completely honest with him. I went down. I was walking back up the track. When I got up there, there was a guy up the pole. He must have been in the area and had the radio, and they put the phone on there and then. Things happen if you tell the truth. I wasn't, and it wasn't the truth. That was a lifeline. Couldn't get to the meetings you can get to now. They weren't the people about. You couldn't just go and visit someone. They might be 20 miles away. But, you know, it was just amazing how things fell into place. You know, they gave me the prison and probation liaison officer. Oh, shit, here I go. But I got into service and I studied the manuals. And today, and for a long time, the traditions mean more to me than the steps. In as much as I can work the steps, I went through the steps, but today I've worked them, I live them. It's a living program with the help of you people. If I'm not with AA alcoholics of any description, I don't think I'd be comfortable. I haven't been more than, I don't know, 5 or 6 days away from an AA meeting. Yes, I have. When I was 6 months over, I was 3 weeks away from a meeting. But I was with my two kids from my first marriage, Sandy, of course, my cousin's kids, my sister's kids. I built a camping van the first 6 months, even the nut house I started to build it, and went down to Wales. Now, there was no meetings, and I couldn't go because I'd take it home with me again. But I stayed with AA. Quite this far, other than I've been in hospital. I've had a few of those sticks in the last 6 years. I think it's 6 or 7. I've had 3 total knees. One, the first one went completely wrong,
And I was
3 years
or more before then. In the meantime, I had the other one done, and I had open heart surgery the first time. None of those things have fazed me at all, but I know they've certainly affected Sandy more than me, because I've just been given the gift of everything will be alright. It'll be alright. Now, it doesn't always happen like that straight away, but within minutes I can usually say it'll be alright, and it has been. But I went back in to have this knee changed or redone, which is a bigger op again, and the first valve wasn't big enough. I went down with congestive heart failure. The only good thing that came out of that, we started a meeting. Someone came, three guys come to see me in the ICU. What about this meeting we're going to start? Selfish bastards. I couldn't breathe. But I was more interested in that meeting. It's been going 2.5 years now. It's a lovely little meeting. But I'm going to get into the fact that I am a traditionalist. And the reason being, I've seen it change so much. And I've seen so many people with other problems die as a direct result of me and others not reading the what's been put out from the General Service Office in particular. How would you treat someone with other problems? Directing them to their own addiction places. It's not only screwed AA up, it's killing addicts all over the place. I've got something here. Some older people would know what this is. I can't remember where it is in, we think it's 12 and 12, where the expression is, shoemaker stick till I last. This is a cobbler's last, or last, I don't know how to say it. It's not a friggin' anchor for a boat. And what he meant was, obviously, stick to what you know, alcoholism. But unfortunately, there's been a load of people, hundreds, thousands of people who, through meaning well, but so did Hitler, sending people to the wrong places. And inevitably, they don't get sober or clean. Some of them, not all of them. So I don't care who's here from any treatment centre, whether you're a director or anything else. I believe that the best is the enemy of the good. And good is AA. And I think I've got proof here. Proof to me anyway, it might not prove to you what I'm saying. This isn't common knowledge, it is now. This is from the General Service Office. And this is statistics. AA's kept statistics going way, way back. And they've done it every year the same. Well, in 1992, when I got sober, that's 37, there was 600,000 of the worldwide fellowship. And I know we were in 70 countries then. By 92, we were two and a half million. By 2015, worldwide, and we're now in 181 countries, we are down 2 million. Go away and think about that. What is happening? We sit here it's growing and all that. Is it bullshit? It's dying, that's what it's doing, slowly. I ain't going to be around to see it die. I'm 74, I ain't going to see it. My son's 10 years sober, 31, isn't he? Our grandson is now 8. We believe he's got a problem. Where's he going to go? I'm not leaving on a bad note. I'm leaving on, as far as I'm concerned, facts. Go away and think about it. Read what comes out of the General Service Office. Get the grapevine. Get any information you can get. I found this tucked away in the General Service Office down there. People weren't supposed to see it. Well, I'm a member of AA. Anything there belongs to me and you. So, you know, on a lighter note, I did have the police knock on the door this morning. And this is memorandum for an old mate of mine that died a year ago or more. Old Ted. I've made a decision there. Most meetings I go to, I'm going to tell a joke for Ted. And the cops were knocking on the door. I said, "What do you want?" So we've heard that your dog's been chasing people on a bicycle. I said, "My dog hasn't got a bicycle." Ted would have loved that. He was, he had me beat by 3 weeks, surprisingly. And I was talking to a newcomer at one of the meetings, and he tried to say, "What do you want?" He said, "What do you want to know?" He said, "I've been around longer than you." We had some fun. But, you know, the fact that I don't believe in a God, I certainly believe in good. And when I got sober, and still today in the UK, you're given a starter pack. And in that starter pack is the Just for the Day card. Now it's AA, but this one is Al-Anon. It's exactly the same. AA doesn't print it anymore now. But I'm twisting a few knobs, put it that way. And this is what I go by. I've only got a few minutes, I'm going to be quick. Just for the day, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle all my problems at once. I can do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I felt that I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for the day, I'll be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for the day, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Well, there's 7 more on there of those things. They're practical things. There's no mention of a higher power, never mind me. But there's things I can do as an individual. What would that mean? We can all do. And that's what my old Tony, my old sponsor, he was a devout Catholic. Man, he was too devout. No, he wasn't. He never once pushed it down like that. He told us one Sunday when we was early days, when Sundays were a funny day, and I called him, he said, "What are you doing today, Mick?" I said, "Oh, I don't know, I've thought about 10 different things." He said, "Well, there's an AA meeting up at this priory." Well, we'd been to this priory, and you know, I had an AA meeting there. It was like 40 miles away. I said, "Oh, what's going on?" He said, "Oh, it's some sort of convention," he said. I thought, "Well, how come? I don't know." Anyway, we made some sandwiches and we went off to this. When we got there, it was an AA meeting. It was anti-abortion. But just making the decision, and that's the whole point of Alcoholics Anonymous. Making a decision. Then sticking to it. That's the crux of it. I'm going to read probably one more thing. Maybe three. No, all right. Oh, I thought he was shutting the lights down. I think it's in here somewhere. No, it's in here. Now you can see, I was ADD before it was invented, so that's why I jumped about all over the shop. Our grandson's just been diagnosed. Now, I'm not saying this because, I'm not reading this because I'm against any religion. I'm not against any religion. Like I told you, I did go to a monastery 3 times. I had a great time. I told them the filthiest jokes I could think of. And they loved it. They asked me back. But, you know, I go to things like this. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honesty, facing his problems in the light of their experience, can recover. Providing he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts, he can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. This is what you need for sobriety. This is what it's telling me. Willingness, honesty and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. These are indispensable. So when these different people come up with all these new ways, you've got to do it this way now. Now they're poor, they're coming to me with papers, look, this is how I've got to do it. What? Do it the way you want to do it. And then, when Bill apologised, I'm going to read that. Because the big book does lay heavy on you have to believe in God. But when he got soberer in 1961, he wrote this. Perhaps more often than we think, we make no contact at depth with alcoholics who are suffering from the dilemma of no faith. Certainly none are more sensitive to spiritual cocksureness, pride and aggression than they are. I'm sure this is something we too often forget. In AA's first years, I all but ruined the whole undertaking with this sort of unconscious arrogance. God, as I understood him, had to be for everyone. Sometimes my aggression was subtle and sometimes it was crude. But either way it was damaging, perhaps fatally so, to members of non-believers. Of course, this sort of thing isn't confined to 12-step work. It is very aptly into our relations with everybody. Even now I catch myself chanting the same old barrier building refrain. Do as I do, believe or I do, or else. Thank you very much. What did you like to say about the expenses? Oh.
Mick, the reason they kept asking you back is because he gave them something to pray for all the time. If you all ever do find yourself in London, there's a really great meeting about a block and a half from it's half a block from Buckingham Palace and station. I just went brain dead.
Marble Arch.
The main station. Whatever. Anyway, Central London, block from Buckingham Palace, Wednesday night, St. Peter's Church. It's an amazing meeting. I've asked Kat to give out the chips, please.
We have a chip system, just like a lot of other places in AA. The chips mark your time. Definitely not the quality. If you're coming in or if you're coming back from, you know, checking things out and seeing how bad it gets, got a white state, white chip. After 30 days and 30 nights, we have a silver chip. After 90 days, we have a red chip. Six months, yellow chip. 9 months, green chip. And birthdays, we have a blue chip. 1 year, multiple.
My name's Jennifer, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jennifer.
This is number 13.
All right.
I'm just really grateful to the first woman who worked with me and took me through the book and worked the steps with me, and to my sponsor now, who listens to me every week. And I'm just really glad that I have the opportunity to sponsor other women in this program, because that absolutely keeps me sober. So thank you. Any other birthdays? Okay, well, off of the chip, the white chip here one more time. In case you were nodding in the back and you heard the clapping and you want to change your way of life, come on up. Thank you.
Or you're in a blackout. It's Victoria Station. I don't like when you're ever Victoria Station instead of brain fart. Okay, let's see. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.